This is Leafs Breakfast.
A big one down at Scotiabank Arena tonight. The Toronto Maple Leafs hosting the Colorado Avalanche team we haven't seen in quite some time here in the beautiful city of Toronto. Also welcoming back Nazem Kadri, who we saw sitting courtside at the Toronto Raptors game against the Memphis Grizzlies. Of course, you can keep in mind that the Leafs game tonight is on TSN 1050, and we welcome in our good buddy for Leafs Breakfast is Dave Poulin. What's up, Dave?
How are you, Aaron? Nazem Kadri back in the building.
Yeah, I was surprised you weren't sitting next to Nazem at courtside yesterday, Dave.
I missed that invite.
Yeah, you would always be top of my list if I was sitting courtside. But how do you look at Colorado coming in? They are red hot. They're the top scoring team in the National Hockey League, and the Leafs have been amongst the best. It's the Leafs and Calgary as far as stinginess. As far as allowing goals, I mean, these two teams, it's really an interesting matchup of scoring prowess against defensive responsibility.
Well, it is. They've been through a lot early in the year as well, Aaron. You know, they went through missing some key people, and pretty much everyone has picked them to come out of that central division. That's a tough division. And, you know, they seem to be getting it together now and fully entertaining. But, you know, it's unusual when teams as good as Colorado and as good as Carolina change their goaltenders at this point, kind of in their arc, you know, and I think that was a little bit unexpected for them. I think they thought they were going to be able to keep Grubauer, and they weren't. And all of a sudden, you know, to get Darcy Kuemper, that took a little bit of time, but they appear to be back and rolling and getting bodies back in the lineup. And there's so much talent there. And they're also at a, you know, for other teams, still a little bit at an enviable place on the salary cap curve because they haven't quite got to, you know, to the danger level there. They're getting pretty close to it, but they'll have to make some decisions on key players. But they've, you know, they've been fortunate because they've got their key guys signed, and so they're a team that should be a significant Stanley Cup factor this year. And, you know, and then there's opportunity when you get a guy like Nathan MacKinnon out and Nazem, who is fully capable on the offensive side, steps up. And It's fun for me to watch him mature, because I dealt with an 18-year-old, 19-year-old Nazem Kadri, and just to watch him mature, it's like watching your own kids grow up and to see him play like he's playing right now.
Well, Dave, obviously you talk about how the Avalanche have the bulk of their core signed in the long term, but of course Nazem Kadri, an exception to that. With his $4.5 million cap hit, one of the great bargains in the league, and a testament to good negotiating by Lou Lamoriello, but he's an unrestricted free agent at age 31 this summer. What do you think is the market for Nazem Kadri will be when you look at the numbers he's putting up right now with, what is it, last seven games, 16 points. He's leading the Avalanche in scoring, fourth in the league.
Well, it's really dependent on where you see him fitting into your organization, Dave. I mean, you know, he is in a pretty golden spot right there because of the talent around him. And, you know, I think on a top team, he's a two. You know, he's clearly scoring like a one right now, but I think he's a two, you know, on a championship caliber team. And that's kind of always what we thought about him. We thought if he's your second line center and capable offensively as he is, and yet, you know, can win faceoffs, can do different things, and can present matchup problems, he's an ideal two. Now, you know, where that goes with the market, I mean, he may be a guy who's made some money as well, and it could depend on Colorado winning or not. And, you know, if they do go ahead and win and he's a big part of it, that will factor in, because they've got some flexibility too and money coming off the books. There's other guys. It's not just him. I think Barkovsky is a UFA as well. And then there's a couple of other guys on defense that are. So they're going to be in a constant challenging point now. They have another guy, you know, in Nathan MacKinnon, who has 1 year left, and when they're negotiating with anyone, they'll be keeping a long eye on what's happening with number 29.
Dave, Joey Anderson will make his season debut for the Leafs, and Mark Masters, of course, our colleague at TSN, covers the Leafs. A really interesting story about how the Leafs brought Joey Anderson on the trip to California as a way for him to catch up with his younger brother who plays for the LA Kings. And Joey Anderson was talking about what a nice gesture it was from the organization. I think we all shouldn't be surprised, the classy gesture from the Leafs. But as far as his impact, he's going to be playing with David Kampf and Pierre Engvall tonight. What do you expect from Joey Anderson in his season debut?
Well, still a young guy that has promise. I mean, he went through that national team in Ann Arbor and was pretty highly touted guy. He played for Scotty Sandlin for a couple of years at Duluth. And when he came across, there wasn't a lot known about him. But, you know, I think he's had an opportunity now to show them what he can do for a couple of years down on the Marlies. And they're going to see what they have. I mean, they're going to continue. They have the luxury right now with how well things are going. As long as they can maneuver, this would be a pretty clean salary cap transaction. And they're going to continue to try and figure out what they have in their organization. And just as they're doing rotating three defensemen, we're going to see some different players play here. And the opportunity is still there with Mikheyev out of the lineup to see, you know, what a young forward. And they'd be asking specifically what he does, what he brings with the Marlies, what role he plays with them. And that's the communication with the American Hockey League team. But it's a great time to try things like this when things are going so well. I mean, think of the environment he's stepping into now, and he's stepping into a really positive locker room that's on a roll. He's being plugged in with players who are playing very, very well. And so that's the luxury of a good team, guys, is being able to do these things under good circumstances, not under, holy smokes, is this a panic move because we're bringing some kid up from the Marlies to try and save the day. That's not what this is at all. And so when you've created that environment, as the Leafs have right now, and that the strength in the locker room and the way things are going on the ice, it's just much, you know, it's like anything in life. When things are going well, it's much, much easier to try different things.
So, Dave, it's interesting the way the Leafs have approached this season. We know about the debacle that was the collapse against Montreal in the playoffs. And it's as though they're on their best behavior right out of the gate, right? They're talking about how businesslike they are. They went to California, never took a day off in the California sun, practiced every day. Obviously, they're playing lockdown hockey in a way we haven't seen it before. Second best team in the league defensively in terms of goals against average. You know, the question I have for you, you've been on teams that have gone deep, gone to the final, and you know we know how long a haul it is for those teams. And I'm wondering, when you look at this team and how they've kind of sprinted out of the gate and said, we're going to play what seems like playoff-style hockey right from the beginning of the season, I'm wondering, like, what are the challenges for them in terms of sustaining that? Because the playoffs don't begin for another 5 months.
Yeah, and I think it's a great point. And it's a great point, Dave. And can you sustain it? And yes, I played on teams that were good all year long. And when I looked at the California trip, California was always a real carrot for us because it was the only southern city. And so you usually got a break of 6 or 7 days in California. And then it became immediately, okay, how are you going to handle a California break? And you only had the one game out there. It was either the start of the road trip or the end of the road trip. And what days you were going to get off, whatever. Now, our best teams in Philadelphia that went through there, we practiced every day of a California trip. And so I thought of that when you were chatting about it earlier, like, is that unusual? And here was the modus operandi of Mike Keenan, 8 a.m. practices every day.
Wow.
So up at 6:30, breakfast. I can still picture having breakfast in that Marriott hotel. So you'd be up literally at 6 o'clock, and there was a big counter, and everybody would be having breakfast, and there'd be a buzz. You know, it's 6 o'clock in the morning. It's beautiful morning setting out. And at that point, there was only one locker room in the old visiting locker room in the old LA Forum. So they built a de facto locker room in the parking garage at the Marriott Hotel. And it was a screen mesh parking garage. So you'd troop down to the parking lot. You'd be putting your gear on in a steel cage in the underground parking lot at the Marriott. And you'd be getting on a bus to go to an 8 a.m. practice. And everyone was so happy. They were so happy. And you knew you were going to have about a 45-minute to an hour-long practice, and you'd be hooting and hollering on the bus on the way over to Culver Rink in Culver City, and you'd be done at 9 o'clock in the morning every day. You'd have the whole day ahead of you every day in California. And that was what we did, but we knew we were getting up at 6 in the morning to practice again the next day. It didn't matter if, you know, how good a team we were, and we were really good. And so I think it was interesting that they did skate every day. They had some time off, you know, and you know, they'd have afternoons and they would have been down in Manhattan Beach or wherever they were and, you know, sitting outside having lunch and enjoying it, but also enjoying the fact that it had already been a work day. And Dave, I think this is part of the art of the locker room that's developing there. And you don't paint the picture of the locker room and have it be a perfect painting right away. No. And they've gone through some iterations. And there could be significant contributors in that locker room right now that aren't even there anymore. I mean, Joe Thornton, and for what he did when he went through here, could be having an impact right now on the Toronto Maple Leafs locker room, something he did or said at a key moment. And the makeup of it right now appears to be very good, but it's also been contributed to by different characters along the way. And right now, if the question came up, and I'll reflect back to my own experience, if the question came up and someone said, oh, are we really practicing today? Three different guys would jump on him and say, hey, we're practicing today. We're going to have a great practice. We'll be done at 1 o'clock. End the conversation. And that would be the end of the conversation. And so that's, you know, that's what we're watching. They've got kind of a light schedule in December. I say that they've only got 13 games. They've got a really, I think, a really favorable December schedule. And they go away in mid-December, but they're back. And I think they only play one game away between, like, over the Christmas break. So I think from, like, the 20th to, I don't know, mid-January, or no, sorry, the first, late in the first week of January. So over that course of close to 2.5 weeks, they only have one away game. So they're home over the Christmas break. So they'd be looking at all these different factors and saying, okay, we've got 13 games. And the other thing, you know, I can build this any way you want to, Dave. I can say you've got 27 games left until February 1st, and that's a 3-week Olympic break. You know, mm-hmm. and you've played, you know, what have you played? You've played 25 games right now. So you've got almost the exact same number of games left as you have right now. You know, right now, your record is terrific. It's 16-6-1. Our record is going to be exactly that good for the next 27 games before the Olympic break, or better. So, you know, break it up however you want to break it up. But right now, when you're rolling along and things are going well, it's easy to pose all these different things and take from the leadership group and say, here's what we're doing, here's why we're practicing in California, and there's no questions asked.
In conversation with TSN hockey analyst Dave Poulin. Dave, I would be remiss if I didn't bring up the name Brian Kelly, the now former head football coach of Notre Dame. You, of course, a storied alumnus of the university. How are you and the other alums feeling about Kelly's departure and what's to come next for the program?
I don't think the timing is very good, and I don't think the whole look is very good for college sports as a whole. I mean, you've got the situation going on at USC that kind of got the ball rolling, and I don't know. I can't imagine being Brian Kelly and walking into that room yesterday morning to a group of players that you'd recruited, and some of them he's had there for now 4 or 5 years on campus and been through everything he's been through and preached loyalty and preached team and preached togetherness and tell them, oh, by the way, I'm leaving now. We're 10-1 and we could be in the, depending on how the playoffs play out, we could be in the BCS and be in the championship, you know, playoff, but I'm leaving. I don't know how you have that conversation. Apparently it was a very, very quick one. There were no questions asked, but I don't like the look for college sports at all. It staggers me that a coach would leave, you know, before his team is potentially playing in a championship game and just walk out the door. It makes no sense to me at all.
Well, it's just staggering sums of money, too. I mean, LSU, USC, just shelling out incredible, incredible amounts. And, I mean, college football is a booming business, clearly. And I guess the players aren't necessarily receiving.
It's always been that, but this is a whole different level of, I don't even know how to explain it. But, so my phone was lighting up pretty good the other night without a question.
I'm sure. As always, Dave, we appreciate you taking the time for us on Leafs Breakfast and look forward to chatting with you again next week when you join us for your regular Wednesday appearance. Thanks, man.
Thanks, guys. Have a great day.
All right. That is TSN hockey analyst Dave Poulin. Yeah, I can only imagine. Brian Kelly, 7 a.m. meeting, calls for his team. Hey, everyone, just got 95 mil. I'll see you later. But
I mean,
that's the redacted situation, right?
It's you know, the hypocrisy of college sports is you know, well documented and has been, you know, enumerated many times. But this is, I'm with Pooley on this one. Like, these deals these coaches are getting, $110 million for Lincoln Riley at USC, and you know, something in the range of 95 to 100 for Brian Kelly at LSU. It's staggering, and it just makes you cringe when you hear the argument about why they can't pay the players and this whole juggernaut of a billion-plus-dollar, multi-billion-dollar industry that is college sports, you know, running on the back of free labor, essentially. I mean, it's hard to imagine it still exists, and yet it does.
I know.
Image and likeness. Was it Spencer Rattler Oklahoma was signing autographs for a Bill 50 a pop, and now he's transferring out of there, trying to get a new gig as a quarterback. So, I mean, it's a tough spot. It's a tough spot, but, man, being a coach in college football or being a player in Major League Baseball, a free agent, two of the more lucrative spots in the professional sports world at this very moment. He is Dave Festruck. I'm Aaron Korolnik. The third hour, first up on the way, one of our favorites, Liam McHugh, the American James Duthie from the NHL on TNT, will join us at 8:45. I guess Liam didn't have to go to Regina for a CFL game, so maybe it's not the most apt comparison anymore, but he will join us, and we have Bang or What coming up at 8:20 in a jam-packed third hour of First Up here on TSN 1050.